I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. I recently sat down with Elizabeth Green, a British author from North London, now living in New York City. Elizabeth always knew she wanted to move here, and after years of marriage and creating three children, she then divorced and took the leap. She opened a restaurant called Planted in the West Village and wrote a book about her life back in the UK. We had a great chat about hard choices and even harder lessons, all in an effort for her to find her slice of the pie. Please welcome Elizabeth Green. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth Green. It's great to be here with you today.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to be here, Susan.
Yeah, it's nice to sit down. Actually, Elizabeth and I are sitting down together today. We took the precautions needed and decided to do an in-person, which is, I think, a lovelier way to interact with someone. So thanks
Definitely.
For having me. Yeah, so like I had kicked off saying, you are British. You grew up in the UK in North London. Spent your formative years there. Did have a period of time in your young adult life where you explored and spent time in India, but settled back in at home and got married, raised children, had a family. And now in your life, fast forwarding, not dismissing, but just fast forwarding a little bit, you are now residing in New York, have been doing so for a decade or more. And, you know, that in and of itself is exciting. Not everyone gets to have even just that much of movement or change in their lives. So talk to me a little bit about what life was like for you back home that would eventually bring you this far away across the Atlantic.
I got divorced, and I think quite soon after that, I decided I needed a change. And the kids were all getting bigger by then and going off and doing their thing, you know, so I suppose right. I was empty nesting. I'd always wanted to come to America. I felt a bit sort of stifled in England. In New York, there's no two anything, which I like.
Right.
There's no two anything. So it was much more of an opportunity to be myself. I really related with Americans, although us English think you're shallow on a different level.
Sure.
We're different on we've got our own level of where we go. Yes, I was crazy, but I got very single-minded and I said, I'm going to go and live in New York.
Yeah.
So my daughter-in-law actually was here in 2009. I visited a couple of times. I met someone on J-Date, which I've written about in the book.
Fantastic.
Changed all the names.
Yeah. Because we are actually also, you know, talking about Elizabeth's book, about your book that you wrote. And so we definitely want to highlight that a bit and we'll continue to. So that's interesting. So you come here for a visit. Your daughter-in-law is here, which is great because like most people, not everyone, you know, would love to know that there's just that one person on the other side when they arrive so that they can kind of get their feet wet. You know.
She was working. She wasn't going to hang
even
out just, with me.
Even to stay with you, her, or to,
stuff. I can't even remember what I did, but I think I met this guy, so I was kind of quite involved in being around this guy. You know how us women get around men.
Yes.
And also, my family's quite prominent in England. I didn't totally realize it, but I think subconsciously I wanted to get away from it so I didn't have to open the paper every day and read about my family in the newspaper, who I didn't spend that much time with. So it was always a feeling of being left out.
Right.
So
it's
here,
lots of noise, but also not your noise, but you're connected.
No, so here,
yeah.
Mostly people didn't know me, although he then, I think, just when I was arriving or very soon after, opened a store here. So then he had a little bit of prominence here, but it didn't matter.
The gentleman that you had met?
No, my brother opened a store.
Oh, your brother
here.
Did. Okay, yeah. Okay.
And then,
so there's a little bit of tethering and ties here, but limited. You are the one who's here, there.
Yeah, and then I realized, okay. I think much further down the line, it was so interesting, like now I have I opened a restaurant here because I'm crazy.
Sure.
People remember you because of the accent.
Yeah,
so that was
yeah.
actually quite nice, and that hadn't been part of the equation. I thought, oh, I'll stand out, I'll be different. But it turned out to be the case for good and for bad sometimes.
That's really neat. So you came here, you got your feet wet, you obviously immediately knew this was where you wanted to be because you either did you stay or did you go back to get your belongings? You essentially made your home.
I went back and forth, and yeah. I was actually just buying a house in England. I was just moving out of the marital house. So I was buying a house in England and looking for an apartment here. I mean, I was nuts. But when you kind of get like, I'm going to do this because I say so, yeah. not for any other reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just went ahead with it. So,
but that's amazing.
And I came in and out, and they're so tough at customs. They're nasty.
Yeah.
I found out you should go to JFK, not Newark. They're nicer quite late on. And so eventually I had to get I started off with a tourist visa, and then they said to me, oh, you're messing with the tourist visa. Why are you coming in and out so
yeah,
much?
Yeah.
So then they told me I had to get a B1, B2. So yeah. then I had to get a lawyer, and that worked for a bit. And then they gave me stuff at customs. So I said to the guy, what do I do? He said, if you buy a business, they'll leave you alone. So I ended up buying a restaurant. I had no idea. I couldn't have chosen anything harder.
Did you do anything?
I had tried.
Did you do anything like that back in
England? No,
It wasn't even like it was on the periphery of your, you know, business or any of your
Absolutely not.
There.
I'd never been in business in my life before. Yeah. So not only I decided to go into business, but I do it in a country. I had two friends here.
Okay.
I actually had two friends here.
Okay.
Alison, bless her, and her husband, Jim. I had two friends here.
So that's nice to have a little bit of company.
And they didn't think much of the guy I'd met either, but that's another story.
That's okay.
So I managed to organize a loan from the family against my house in London, which I owned, and
got yourself situated and started.
Got myself situated and started. It was nuts.
Of course it was. Crazy. Although, you know, moving across the world is never easy. I mean, when we move just from one city here to another, it's complicated and complex. So I don't doubt all of the red tape that comes with, you know, the idea of having visas or having long-term papers to be able
but
to
But what I discuss, everybody talks to you here and everybody's very friendly and everybody's very accommodating.
I think so too.
So that helped. It wasn't like there was nobody to ask stuff from or talk to, but
right.
I didn't know anybody. No, I had to get recommended
from
the people I was buying
own.
The business from. Yeah. Recommended a lawyer, blah, 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 blah. Oh, God, I met some... I've just realized I'm starting another book now about being a woman in business in New York.
That's really good.
And
I think your perspective, especially the way you started here, not just the way you ended up more recently.
All these experts, so-called experts. What I realized, what I've just started writing the book is that... when you're an expert, you just know how to hoodwink people better. You're better at it
That's
because
right.
you're an expert.
Your skills are in sliming through the system and the process.
Our skills.
That's
your
right.
Skills.
Those are the
Absolutely.
skills.
Absolutely.
So did you feel in the beginning that you immediately felt comfortable, or did you feel like you couldn't, like you needed to continue building the barometer of trust? Like, was it an easy transition?
I'm awful. I kind of jump in. Okay. I have two... zones I operate in. I either trust everybody or I don't trust anybody.
Okay.
There's not much middle ground. So I kind of was trusting.
Okay, that's good. I mean, because transitioning again is not easy, and people dream of taking this dive and this making this shift, but you know, they feel a little...
I just got very single-minded, if you like, okay. And I said, I'm going to do this because I said I'm going to do this.
So you've sort of escaped the roots and the home life from the UK, which was with intention, because like you had mentioned...
Yeah, and in fact, I had the house there, so my son lived in the house and my daughter lived some of the time in the house,
mm-hmm.
and then he brought his girlfriend in, and so the house was looked after, so...
Excellent.
That was that, and they lived there free for a bit, and then I went, oh, I think they should at least pay me for the bills, so they paid for the bills, so they saved money and
sure.
could do... buy their own house eventually and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
And here I was, so I had to find an apartment. Nothing was easy.
No.
We were just saying. So I've got no track record at all. So in fact, the terrible guy off J-Date recommended me to his bank manager, so mm-hmm. that helped. And then he recommended me to his person with a phone, because initially I didn't even have a social security number.
Right.
So you're really nobody.
You like, really are.
Nobody.
It's really hard to... integrate even just basic services, that's right, and be able to navigate normally without any of that documentation. It's strange that we...
Incredible. And we don't have these social security numbers
right.
for life like you do in
right.
England. You get a national insurance number when you start work.
Right.
But So here I was with no, anyway, through the terrible guy, I'd met a guy who I knew could cook. He said he'd managed restaurants. I don't think he had. So he came and managed the restaurant I bought.
Okay.
And then the sort of shenanigans started. And then I learned so much stuff I never thought I would ever have to know, ever, very fast.
Okay. So that wasn't the most wildly successful endeavor then. We can...
No, at the beginning, the burger bar was actually very good. I mean, I don't know how much I should say, but when I got a CPA and I had to get the numbers over from them, their accountant said, I can't email them because actually there's two sets of books. Ah! It's like, hello, welcome to America. So they creamed off something anyway. So we got the numbers and we started. But I think, and the theme that I noticed more and more every day, it's all it is about standing up for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a flipping expert in anything. You don't have to know necessarily what you're doing, but you have to stand up for yourself. And
yeah.
Being a woman, and a short one at that, it's hard going. It's hardcore. And that's what a lot of it was in the beginning, which I don't think I realized. And so people would push me around and say, oh, no, we need to do it this way, or we should do this, or we should buy this, or we should close at this time. And I would kind of...
Not know better?
No, it wasn't even that. It was like I kind of was afraid to say no.
Okay.
I
you didn't realize that life here can often replicate a battleground. And that's how I sort of look at it sometimes.
Also, the other piece is I'm still the same person. It's me who came from England. It's still me here.
Sure.
It's not like, oh, I got off the plane and now I'm
a
new
person. You had a frontal lobotomy.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah.
Unfortunately, unfortunately. So it's still me doing all this stuff. But, you know, I had a lot of fun along the way. I mean, it's just I did not handle the money stuff well enough and I did not stand up to people. So the burger bar was good and the burger bar went well for a time. I mean, dealing with the staff is the hardest piece.
Sure.
Always, always, always. And then I took some partners on. Disaster, disaster. Oh God, I'd so like to name and shame all these people, but moving on, I won't. But I had an Israeli partner and one with Israeli parents. And basically, they saw me coming. I might as well have had mug stamped on my forehead.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to write about
in your business book, yeah.
Oh, yes, I have to kind of get that all out of my system. The only good thing that happened was, so they came along in 2016 in July, and I got rid of them at the end of 2017. It was hardcore. And in 2017, they said to me, oh, we don't need you at the business. You could just go to the beach or join a book club or something. And I was so affronted. We'd have these monthly meetings and I'd shout and scream and rant and rave. Didn't do anything. But that's when I wrote the book in 2017. I actually sat down and wrote the story of my life. So only thing I have to thank them for is that.
You bet it kind of propelled you to get that.
Well, that I had so much time
done.
On my
That's right.
flipping hands. I
That's
had to
right.
do something with it. Yes.
So
that was the silver lining.
So you wrote a book and it goes into stories and details of your past and your family and your upbringing, I imagine. I haven't read the entire thing because I don't have my copy yet, but I plan to. talk to me a little bit about how it felt to have separation, right? Because you left your homeland, you came here, and then you had a need to talk about your upbringing.
I guess
I
guess I have to dish a little bit on my family, which I a little bit. My family were. I had a brother who did very, very well for himself. He's a very, very well known entrepreneur in England, and so I was the also ran. I was the not very important. Oh no, we haven't got time for you, and everything was about him. Everything was about him. My mother was obsessed with him. She's a Jewish mother. She got her son. I was the first one. So, you know, I had my little 3.5 years moment of glory. And then he came along. And that was it. And I think the worst thing is I didn't notice. Well, I kind of knew what was going on. But you know how you don't let go of hope? Or
sure.
I didn't let go of hope.
Sure.
And I kept waiting for that word of acknowledgement. And I kept waiting to be told I did something well. And it didn't come. So that's why I went to India, partly. That was my first
time.
Getaway.
Yeah, right.
And India was, it's funny, I made friends with, I re-met somebody again. I'd known in India 40 years ago.
Fantastic.
And we message sometimes. He's in Germany, Anam, he still calls himself by, when you go to India and see the guru, he gives you an Indian name.
Right.
And it's only very recently him and I have been talking, and he said to me, yes, it was very daring to do what we did back in the 70s, to go to India and have a guru and look at what enlightenment was and wake yourself up.
That's right.
But you don't realize that.
That's right. So, but you just went and you did it. So you had that experience. You returned home and got married. Did you still feel like that rejection, if you will, existed? It just threaded through? Or were you able now with your own family and establishing your own home with your husband to sort of ignore it and say, oh, I'm going to do things differently?
Well, yes and no, because the complication was that there was a lot of money involved. He got very rich, big, an entrepreneur. And so everything was a negotiation about money.
Okay.
And, you know, at the beginning I was like, no, I'm going to be independent and I'm going to do my own thing. Didn't last very long. Okay. And then I forgave myself and I said, you know what, they've got money and I haven't. So if I need some money and I'm stuck, I guess I'll just have to ask for it. Does it make me a bad person? No, it just makes me a person who didn't quite get to their level.
Right.
So that's kind of what happened.
Okay.
So, but then, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So
never.
So you're entangled in this entangled situation. So yes, I tried to make a break, and yes, I came to New York, and that was possibly far enough away. But you know, there were things they paid for and money, and they gave me things.
Sure.
They were zero interested in the restaurant. He's been to New York. They've both been to New York different times.
Okay.
In fact, I met him on the steps of his store downtown in Soho one afternoon.
Okay.
By accident. Well, it wasn't quite by accident. I'm friends with his driver. And
okay.
We'd been talking. He told me he was in town. And I was down on the Lower East Side. And my feet started taking me towards his shop.
Yeah.
And there he was on the steps. And I said to him, oh, do you want to come and see the restaurant? And he's like, why would I want to do that?
Well, that's a shame.
So there was one point just before, I think around the time I was getting divorced in England, where I started to get an idea about what was going on and raised my head above the parapet. And I reached out to the Jewish Chronicle and said to them, I am so-and-so's sister, which gave me street cred. Could I write an article for you? And they said yes. And in fact, the guy who's now proof editing my book was the managing editor of the Jewish Chronicle then. I've found him again on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
And he's very funny because he tells me how excited they were when they heard that I was coming on board. All this stuff that I didn't ever know.
Right.
And the other thing that was cute was, because I've done a lot of self-development work. And apparently when I met him in 2008 at the Jewish Chronicle with the editor, because I had a beef about something, apparently I turned around and said to this guy, oh, you should get out of your head and into your heart. And he had no idea what I was talking about. He just told me the other day, he's a guy, and it's quite a, maybe it's a girl's book, I don't know. It's just a people's book, I hope. He's been reading it, he loves the book. And he said to me, he said, now I understand what you were talking about all those years ago, about getting out of your head and into your heart.
That's
which
amazing.
Which I thought was fabulous.
And you clearly have pursued that very philosophy of life and living and thinking.
I know, but I'd love to have done all this 40 years ago, because
well,
a lot of time's gone.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm still looking for the one.
Yeah,
I've
who
just
is
written
it?
My wish list.
That's okay.
I need my person.
Yes, I do too, and I agree, and I understand that.
When I was writing this, when I was been writing recently, the second book, it's interesting writing. It's kind of, you start and then you get in a flow and it kind of comes. It's like having a conversation with someone out there and you're just writing. And what came up was at the end of a harrowing day at the restaurant, or where it's been really tough, when I come home, there's nobody, I don't have anyone to put my head on their shoulder or have a sob and tell them how stretched I feel.
Right.
So I'm ever hopeful. I'm ever...
But because we have to remain that way.
But I didn't have good role models.
Right.
I didn't, you know.
Hence, you had to get to this point in your life to develop in your own way so that you could, when you have that partnership, eventually, show up in all the ways that you actually want to and wish you could have back at a certain point.
I've worked so bloody hard at this. I think the biggest piece that was missing, parents out there, I had no self-confidence. I didn't think I was worth squat.
Yeah.
And that holds you back.
It does, because it sends you off into adulthood really not regarding yourself when you're in any kind of a situation, which means that you'll always be at the bottom. You're certainly more prone to place yourself there. And that's a really tough way to live, because you're like almost in place, moving in place and never getting anywhere.
Yeah, and I had that revelation yesterday, and I hope that's what's threaded through the book. I have this friend who's my guide and mentor and very old friend, I don't know, 20 years or something. She's in San Francisco. And I said to her, I notice I can't ever give up these habits I have. They will never go. The only thing that will change is I'll get miles, miles and miles quicker at picking myself up and noticing. And what I said to her yesterday, any guy who ever shows any interest in me or anyone I meet and I think, oh, God, they're nice. The first thought or a very early thought that pops up, oh, I don't know if I'm worth it. Why are they interested in me? What's wrong with them? They don't mean it. They're just messing with me.
The recording. So, it's like you have to get rid of the recording.
The voice.
Yes.
So you're having the relationship or the friendship or you're meeting someone on top of, oh, you know, but you're just feeling sorry for myself. You know, sorry for me. You don't really like me. Why are you interested in me?
Sure.
I'm not worth it.
Well, that's part of the work and you're doing the work. So that has to go.
In a way, writing a book. I'd like some attention. What is it I said to somebody? They said, great, I'm glad you... I'd like some attention.
Fair enough.
It's my time.
Fair enough.
I've kept my mouth shut for 25 years.
Yeah.
I have never... Occasionally, the papers in England have chased me down or written stuff that sometimes I've said and sometimes I haven't.
Sure, that happens.
Because he's such a prominent person in London. But, yes, my time.
Yeah.
And that's what I think coming to New York was.
Well, it was a bold statement. It was a bold move. And you clearly wanted to be able to create life on your terms and not have to live with any distinction to that life there.
Oh my God, that's so hard. It sounds so lovely when you say it. It's like, oh, can I have that, please?
Well, that is what we order up. But you and I both know from a day-to-day trekking down the road, trekking down the street activity, that is not how life goes. But that's the overall intention.
But you see, it's very funny because I'm not very paranoid about, well, I'm a tiny bit more today now about my server going and possibly coming back with some.
Well, yeah,
but
the current conditions.
I'm not that paranoid about the virus, but I'm very paranoid about lots of other things with good reason. And it's interesting that I can have the two states of mind. I'm not a paranoid person, but I'm paranoid about certain things. I notice that you kind of notice things every day about yourself.
Right.
And the thing is, if you mess up, you mess up.
Every day's a new day, new canvas. That's how I like to look at it. So you're here, you have a different restaurant now. You have
Premises, same place.
Right.
So I got rid of the terrible partners.
Yep.
Oh my God, they were awful. And they've left me a little legacy. Seems like they didn't quite report the sales tax figures correctly.
Of course, money's always involved and it
gets
messy.
Money's always involved.
Yes, but I
actually can laugh at it now, which is funny. So
no, that's actually brilliant because that means you've gotten far enough away from the pain of it. Let's face it.
Most days.
Yeah.
In this January, I had been running on my own. I had a chef who actually was quite good at his food, but he was Mexican. He was nuts. He was just such hard work and he was very temperamental. And every time, every few weeks, he said, I'm leaving. I'm going. And I go, oh, no, please don't. Oh, no. And the last time he did it in February, the restaurant was full. There were all the mums and kids from the school next door, all in Halloween costume. No, not Halloween. All in costume for something. And he goes, I'm leaving. And I go, goodbye.
You're done.
You've got to get to the moment when you get to the moment.
Yeah, you're done.
But in January, unbeknownst to him, well, first of all, the lease ran out in April. And the land, I brought somebody in to broker it, and the landlord didn't want to pay him. It's too expensive. So the landlord went behind my back and put an ad on Craigslist for the restaurant. And one night some Russians came marching to the restaurant. I'd literally been left 15 minutes sick. Hello, everybody. We've come to buy the restaurant. We've just come to look it over. Unannounced. Anyway, so the chef phoned me up. I had to go back down there and sort it all out. And then I started to... And I was going to sell the restaurant. Well, you can't sell it. Restaurants aren't worth anything. But I was going to get rid of it. And these people were so horrible and so mean and everybody treated me so poorly. I kind of decided in January, I put an ad on Indeed and I said, I'm looking for a vegan chef stroke part owner. And I had 100 replies and I met this Indian woman and we started a conversation because I'd gone vegan.
Sure.
And I decided I would go ahead with it. And then, of course, everything got locked down. So I signed my new lease just after the pandemic had started. I mean, it's nuts. And then I spoke to her in, I don't know, April, May, June, whenever it was. And here we are, we reopened as a vegan restaurant.
And like that, you're like, July. You have a whole new theme and a whole new pathway forward. Oh, and how brilliant is that? That's wonderful.
So we literally, on Friday, just had the sign put up for the name.
Yeah,
it's called Planted, which was my...
I love
my,
it.
My find, decide.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got one on the front, one on the side. We've got a new awning. And it's in an area called a landmark preservation area. So you have to send in a plan, a permission, and blah, blah, blah. Right. And the funny thing is my ex-husband designed the logo.
Fantastic.
And he's my designer.
Okay.
And sometimes I want to kill him, but it's actually so easy working with someone you've known that long.
Of course it is. I think it's actually wonderful to hear you bring him up now and let me know that,
oh,
you know, that's the nature of it.
It took me about 5 years.
Of course it takes time. Yeah.
Anything to do with him. But,
yeah, but good that you've been able to bring it to that place where there is some communication
absolutely.
And stability. And
I think the thing I suppress a lot, it's really funny. I absolutely love people. But I feel like I have to kind of dial it down or keep it over here a little bit suppressed, because otherwise I want to jump all over everybody and hug everybody.
Is that culture, your culture, though, that
no,
keeps you?
No. Okay. What? Oh.
Suppressing
oh,
it?
Oh, I thought you meant, is it like that in England?
No, it's the reverse, so.
No, it's not, because I was amazed that I married an English guy. I never imagined living in England. One of the lines in the book, which has been a joke of mine for years, is if only my grandparents were from Russia on my mother's side, my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And my joke is always, if he stayed on the boat one more stop, I would have been American.
Fascinating.
So
so you always felt like a sense of belonging somewhere else and
yes,
not there.
I didn't, my temperament, my way of being, my whatever it was, I did not feel England wasn't my place.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I can definitely understand that. So you're here, the restaurant reopened this year, things are moving forward. That's really positive news. When was it, and what was it about writing the book that was just so important to you to put out there? Because it's one thing to have a conversation with family, to go back and say, look, I have something to say, and want to have that dialogue and want to have that exchange so that you could hopefully get out of it whatever it is that was not working or missing for you, or the parts that you just felt were misunderstood even. But now you've decided instead, well, not now, but you have decided to write the book. The book is done. It's ready to be published. So,
because actually I have the most important, I'm a writer.
Okay.
I didn't write it to be sensational and to get some attention. From when I was 18, which is also in the book, when I was 18, I told my mother I wanted to be a journalist. I went to this very fancy posh girls' school where everybody was very high achievers. If you didn't go to university, forget, you know, you were one of the others.
Right.
And I had a cousin who worked on an English newspaper, one of the tabloids, the Daily Mail, if you want to know.
Okay.
And he was the head of the entertainment section or something. And she called him over and they had a chat and I was there. And instead of my mother going, oh, would you like to take her and intern her for a day? They decided it would be too hard for me, so I didn't do it. So then I became a teacher, which was awful. And then after I taught for a year, I went to India. So that's how great teaching was.
Okay.
But I always wrote. I always did classes. I always blah, blah, blah. I wanted to write.
Right. It was the platform you felt was best
for
this.
It was what I wanted to do. So writing this wasn't like, oh, God, maybe I'll. I was a writer. And if you go back in my computer or you go back, I've been writing stuff for years.
So how do you feel about the book coming out? Does your family know about the content of it?
Well, I told my ex-husband's got an interesting family background. He knows that's in there. My kids seem zero interested. My kids are like, oh, please don't tell me about it. No, we don't want to know. Because I think they think if they don't know, but they're a bit nervous because my brother and his wife will not probably love it, although it is not totally disrespectful to him.
Okay.
And they're worried that any financial help they've got will be cut off, disappeared. So that's why they're mad at me.
Okay.
Other than that, they're used to me being a bit of a whack job, so they don't care what I write.
And your parents are not alive anymore?
My parents are not alive. My father died when I was 15, which didn't help the scenario.
Sure.
And my mother died about 5 years ago. My mother was, I've got my new word for, she was formidable, my mother. She was very formidable.
Mm-hmm. So how do
so
you
I've
feel
written
now?
To the family, I wrote the family an email to say I've written a book and blah, 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 and I didn't get a reply.
Okay.
And I looked in my, make sure it actually sent. So done my bit.
Did you send any parts of it over for them? Okay, just it gave them the heads up. How do you feel now? Do you feel like it was a cathartic process? Do you feel that you're on the other side of the equation? Did it do for you what you intended it to do? I mean from the therapeutic side of putting it all out there.
Okay.
Clearly the book sales and all the...
As you're going to be a therapist, I'll let that go.
Well, the excitement from the book sales and what's about to happen, I think, is a different kind of, flip side of this. But just the process.
I just wanted to write something. And the fact that this guy... who was the managing editor of the Jewish Chronicle, where I first wrote some articles, which were quite well received, that he loves the way it's written. Mm-hmm. He actually loves the way it's written. To me, that's therapeutic.
Good.
That I'm actually a writer.
Validation.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Very good word. Validation.
Yeah. We all
validation.
Need it. Yeah.
And you kind of write about stuff you know. I can't write some spy thriller or some sci-fi.
No, and this is, your family story is a good story.
It's a great, good backstory.
Good
yes,
story,
that's why I'm
absolutely.
Not going to spoil most of it for you.
No, I appreciate that. And I don't want to spoil it for the listeners either, because I really feel like a lot of people feel like they could write their life story, their family story. A lot of people often feel that that's in their cards because everyone has their own ride and experience and journey in this
ain't
life.
Ain't that easy.
But
oh
I think
God.
It's as fascinating to think about doing something like that as it is to really read about other people's life stories. Because like I say on this show, and I say it all the time, and it was something that I used as a tool for my own healing in my own adult life, we find ourselves in other people's stories. We really, really do. We find the affirmation we're looking for. We find the validation that we're looking for. We more importantly find that we're not alone, and that other people have felt the way we've maybe felt or expressed themselves or wanted to and didn't and found themselves really annoyed at their own inability to advocate or stand up. But whatever it is, people find that they are not alone and they too have had the experience.
But you'll have to wait.
Oh,
yes, so what I realized in writing this is that because it's mine, I get to express it as long as there's commas in the right places.
That's right.
That's what the guy in London's doing and stuff. I get to say, it's my say.
That's
I
right.
get to put my, it's
right.
so, I think the biggest piece out of this is that I get validated, I exist, I don't have to be told what to do, I'm my own person.
That's right.
Yes, I've accepted help. Families help each other.
Well,
I always thought
I don't think that you're supposed to feel bad about that, do you? Think
I did.
Yeah, okay.
It was a long time before, I did. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay. This is New York. That's
New
right.
York,
I was going
yeah.
to actually do we pause this? And I'm like, no, it's New York.
No, it's New York.
That's right. These are the sounds of our culture here.
Yeah, really.
So there you have it. I mean, and the thing is, I think and I sense, because you and I talked about this on the phone once before and then you're sharing it again now, the gentleman in the UK who's been helping you refine the language and to make sure that it has the vernacular
yes,
of
it's
your
transient
culture.
Absolutely. In verbs or something.
I mean, that validation through even him, right? It's all important. You deserve that. It belongs to you. It is your story to tell and to do it in a way that you don't have to defend yourself. It's not a combative dialogue. It's your dialogue and it's your story.
My friend in London who worked, when I first wrote in the Jewish Chronicle, she came and interviewed me to do a piece for a paper called The Mail on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we became friends. I think she partly hung on to me in case I could give her any good gossip about the family, but she pretty much knew I couldn't. And we're still friends and she's just left The Mail and she's a new person. She's not this journalist. It's really interesting. And she read the book and she actually said to me, she said, oh, I thought you'd be nastier about your brother than you were. She said, it's nice.
Well, that's good to hear.
Because there's no mileage in
tearing
apart. It's not about him.
It's
the book is about me.
Right.
He's in it because he's in my family.
That's right.
That's how it is.
Yeah, it's your journey. It was your experience, and you're sharing it. And all these people were part of that experience.
And all this. Even now, I don't know it. And I'm not spiritual, and I'm not religious. Although anything in Hebrew makes me cry at the moment. It's really weird.
Okay.
And I don't really believe in God, but I really believe somehow He has a hand in things, and things are going to go the way they're going to go. And us stupid little humans very often think, oh no, I'm in charge, I'm going to make this work this way because I know better, and it doesn't go that way,
right?
And so in a way it gives you a little bit of comfort, even if you don't get the guy you want or you don't, it was meant to be that way. And so it makes it less painful because you're not busy fighting. Well, I wanted it like this. And it's like, it's
that's,
nuts.
Right, that's not
because it
that.
Can only go the way it goes.
Right.
We're, it's all predestined.
Another favorite word of mine, surrender then. So it's sort of surrendering to the entire process,
right? Oh my God, totally. And that's what India was all about,
taught
surrendering.
You that. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, again, the Wild Wild Country on Netflix.
Right.
That's about the guru I was with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was from North London and I took someone's child to India and I got a new name. And then I'm doing things about surrendering and I'm cleaning the restaurant there. I'm working in the restaurant, not because I'm working in the restaurant, but because I'm learning how to surrender, and you might as well have something to do all day while you're learning how to surrender.
That's not
different here.
No.
It's actually no different here.
Right.
You're doing what you're doing because you have to have something to do all day.
That's it.
I'm doing what I'm doing because I have to have something to do all day.
Right.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I have to surrender and I have to get out of my own way and I have to create. I've had a very casual relationship with somebody for the last 3 years. And I have learned so much. And it's not like a real relationship. You know, it doesn't fit people's pictures of we're together all the time.
Well, I think that that's also something that's gone away, thank goodness. The idea of this norm of fitting into like what other people think a relationship
should
look like, right?
There's a piece of me that doesn't, want to be like anybody. And believe me, there's a piece of me that just wants to be, I just want to be normal. I just want to be the same as everybody else. I want to have somebody to come home to at night. I'm not so sure I do every night. I've looked at that. So although this guy wasn't around all the time, he was very sweet and he got me. He totally freaking got me. And he did not allow me to get away with stuff. He would point out when I was being, at the circumstances under which I met him are gorgeous. If we've got a minute, I'll tell you. So I went to my brother's store, in fact, and I was taking a girl from my building. She was actually the building manager. And we were going down for a styling appointment. And when we got there, the stylist wasn't there. There was nobody there to greet us. We just didn't get looked after. And I was pissed. And I sounded off. And I was like, this is not okay. I don't know. I was fuming. And I was wearing this, I was wearing this fantastic lime green, very vibrant long dress. And I was probably 20 pounds less than I am now and 3 years younger. But moving on. And they sent him upstairs from the basement. He was one of the managers. He actually worked there. And he was this cute, beautiful guy, young, with a big kind of afro, anyway. But I was pissed. So I kind of, there was one piece of my brain going, ooh. And then, but I was on a rant.
Yes.
And the way he handled me from the minute, he just listened.
Mm.
He knew that I was the boss's sister. He just listened. And he got it, and he heard it, and he didn't say, be quiet. He just, and I kind of, although I was angry, saw what was going on. So I gave him my card. I was so rude. And I said, oh, I've got a restaurant. Here's mine. No idea why. Because again, I'm saying that things happen the way they happen,
sure.
Not of our design.
No.
I said to him, oh, well, you probably won't be able to afford it. But I was so rude. Anyway, we ended up getting together and he was just delicious. And I said to him one day, is there any way I could behave that would really upset you? And he said, no, I've seen you at your worst.
That first introduction.
It was brilliant.
So that's great. So it's nice to have.
It wasn't anywhere.
Do you know what's really great about it? You just said you have been, you know, in a looser relationship for the last 3 years. And I think it's the idea that we always wanted to be normal, but we never got the chance. And that's like the difference between the wish of when we were younger to have not had to have dealt with the things we dealt with that veered us off of that quasi-normal path. So now we're over here. We're actually embracing our differences. We're embracing the fact that we're unique. We embrace the fact that we're on a path. You're living in a city that really allows for the single, allows for the any, the one, and allows you to be anything you want to be at any point in time. And so now you have an unconventional relationship. And the reason it's serving you is because I think somewhere deep down inside, no matter how much we never really lose this idea that we could still have that
the one with the white picket fence. Yeah.
It's really just that. It's this old picture that was never really meant for us. And what's working now is working now because that's what you're built for. That's what you're better at being able to afford yourself at this time. So
it's exactly, if we've come full circle, Absolutely. It's about standing up for yourself.
For sure.
And not listening to the chatter out there. What I noticed when we got locked down was one of these courses I'd done has a telephone thing every morning for half an hour. And you get on the call, and if you want to talk, you flag yourself up, blah, blah, blah. And I did it for 2 days after we'd locked down and the restaurants closed and I'd sent everybody away and we cleared all the food and we gave it to the church next door and the women's refuge, whatever. After 2 days, I couldn't listen to other people's chatter.
Yes.
I know it was bad of me and mean of me. I had so much chatter in my own head. What am I going to listen to other people's for?
That's not for everyone. Sometimes you just need to decompress in a way that it has less chaos.
And I got very fussy about, there were people I wanted to talk to and people I didn't want to talk to. And I have to give him a shout out. My youngest son, bless him, phoned me every day for a while. He was also the one that said I should have bread as an emergency, and I kept buying sourdough loaves of bread, and every day was an emergency, and the weight came back on.
Well, you know, that's how that works. You know. Yes.
But he called me every day, and we had this method of being on the phone. We did not sit and look at each other for 2 hours. I would leave the phone on FaceTime, and I would potter, and he would potter, and we'd say, oh, what about this? And you remember? And he's actually quite a good gossip for a boy. He's fantastic. So we'd have a gossip. And that's how we related every day. And I tell you, it made a huge difference.
Yeah.
But he didn't have to be there eyeball to eyeball.
Right.
Oh, I'm getting upset.
It's lovely. It's sweet. Cheery. I think that you're so fortunate to have had that kind of connection. And it worked. And you figured out how to make it work. And
it's all right. Now he's being a little sod. So it doesn't last.
But, let's sort of wrap this first part conversation up, because I feel like you are so dynamic, layered with, awesome stories, which the one, of course, in front of me, I can't wait to read. But beyond that, I know there are more, aside even from your next book. When does this book come out? When can everyone get
this
a look at?
This book is hopefully probably second week in October, let's say, because it's almost October now.
Yes.
So in the next 2 or 3 weeks, it's going to be on Amazon.
Fantastic.
Okay.
So we'll be able to order our paper copies as well as our digital, I imagine.
Yes. And I actually, very fortunate, I met somebody who does Audible books. So hopefully and she's English. So,
okay.
And she's an actress. So
wonderful.
Hopefully we can go ahead with that.
Eventually you'll have the audio version.
Yes.
So this is fantastic. So what I'm going to do is I will include in the show notes for everyone the links to find the book to ensure that we...
And the restaurant.
Because, whether you are a vegan or vegetarian, whatever your lifestyle
choices
are...
We cater for everybody. We're vegan, we have vegetarian dishes, we have some fish on there.
There you go.
And the food is actually fabulous. And we have live music on Friday night. It was like doing a Chinese jigsaw puzzle. We bought the screens that we bought for inside outside to put between
the
tables.
Making
so we
work.
Could ram the tables.
That's it.
And it was full, and the weather's gorgeous.
And
at
it's
the moment.
Called Planted. It's in the West Village.
It's in the West Village.
Yeah.
If you go down there, you put in vegan, you'll find it. It's on the corner of 6th Avenue and Washington Place, opposite Washington Square Park.
Yeah. But we'll make sure everyone knows where to get their meals and now get the book. And I'm excited. And... Well, I thank you for actually letting me talk to you about your life and sharing your story.
Thank you. It was nice.
Good to have you.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.